Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Sin Scout by K.C. Griffont, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. She had to find the eggs. Sin Scout blinked alive for the umpteenth time, testing her four legs of creaking metal. The pneumatics powered by the fuel cell in her belly warmed her gears, the stretched hide, and bare skull. She glanced behind her to test the iron tail that clanked against the ground. Satisfied that the body was undamaged, Sin Scout trotted out over the hardened volcanic plains of what had once been Vancouver. She shot a message out to the other 15 afters across the globe to let them know she was successfully in a new body. The afters had found that golden retriever-sized military bots, mech mutts, had the best survival rate. Four legs made them fast, taloned fingers helped them climb, and barbed tails acted as an additional defense. A high-end transmitter built into the mech mutts let the afters continuously upload backups of themselves if their bodies were destroyed. With the addition of human-like skulls that could create words, should they ever need that archaic communication, the mech mutts provided the bodies the afters needed to carry out their mission. And Sin Scout was close to finishing that mission. An impenetrable wall of rock faced her, some new mountain that emerged on the east side of the former city. She calculated the time for climb versus dig, and started to dig. Next to her, half buried in the volcanic rock, rested the charred figure of a humanoid holding a smaller one, an almost perfect replica of the Pompeii figures she had seen years ago at the Naples National Archaeological Museum. She burrowed a trail under the mountain. The memories of when she was once owner and dog, Cynthia and Scout, flooded back. Several months ago, she had been a head programmer for one of the largest tech companies on the globe, tapping manicured nails and smiling pleasantly while the CEO screamed in their team meetings. Scout, with his soulful brown eyes and floppy spotted ears, had been the one steady thing in her life ever since she was a teen. The exorbitantly priced Forever Quantum chip she had helped design let her and the other well-off pet owners infuse clones upon clones of their beloved sidekicks' minds into new bodies. Never in a million years would Cynthia have guessed that the Forever chip would be her and Scout's pass to surviving Armageddon. When the strain of a raging contagion and conflux of global superstorms resulted in a brief but effective nuclear war, she and a handful of other quick-thinking pet owners had the same idea. They used the Forever chips to upload copies of their own neural patterns alongside of their furred friends and stored their fused personas safely in the remaining satellites. From there, the afters were able to transmit themselves into various bodies as needed. Salvaged computers, industrial robotic arms, and, most recently, the handful of mech mutts remaining across the globe in former army bases. Now, she and the other afters carried out the grim purpose they had come to agree upon, to ease suffering, to help usher in the end of this era. That was the Earth's intent, clearly, and so it was theirs. As soon as they were done, they too would end themselves. The few hundred humans that survived had formed gangs that the afters hunted, putting a quick end to their brutal fighting for remaining water and carrying out atrocities that Sin Scout had erased from her memory in subsequent incarnations. Her heart twisted whenever she thought of the slaughters, but her loyalty to the other afters and their mission was unwavering. And the last part of their mission remained: to find the readings of a failed experiment, frozen and now unearthed. that had appeared on their scans. A new signal, self-named Eggs, genetically altered, transmitted out in SOS. Help. Mayday. Likely humans, somehow, still trying to survive in a world in which they were not meant to inhabit any longer. The thought of new life trying to grow and suffering in this burning world made Sin Scout stride faster. She was the closest to finding the eggs. Earth had reached the end of its life cycle. So too had everything else. The sooner humans accepted death, the better. This was a mercy killing. She lopped over what used to be a city block and tapped into a satellite for a global view. The satellites were nearly out of fuel, making their mission even more imperative. All maps ever made of the region clicked through her thoughts from the zettabytes of data that had collected in their shared database. The lab they had identified as being the likely source of the artificial eggs was wiped clean off the globe. Sin Scout moved systematically over the ruins while stretching out a query. Where are the eggs? State-of-the-art receptors in the mech mutt led her easily across ripples of information on various wavelengths of whatever might be transmitting. Broken tech with remains of power tapped out their desperate messages in ever-growing concentric circles. Battery draining, pinging location, looking for owner, searching for network. All growing closer to silence, closer to the end. She wished them a quick peace. She stopped when she picked up a sound coming from a pile of boulders. Not boulders. These rocks were pushed together purposefully, like a primitive house. Stop. Here, boy. A panting soldier in an exoskeleton popped out from behind a rock. His voice came through his helmet, hoarse and tinny. Burnt and swollen flesh barely hung onto his face. One arm under his filthy suit was gone, the empty sleeve duct-taped up at the shoulder. Sin Scout felt bad for him. No one had told him there was no reason left to survive. Thank God, a mech mutt. His voice wavered. Come here so I can reprogram you. Find me some water. This is the end. It's time to go. Your death will be quick, Sin Scout told him. The Afters had found that sometimes a quick explanation helped. Half the time, the remaining humans seemed relieved, ready to end it all. This soldier wasn't. He took a fighting stance and whipped out a gun, sending two blasts toward her. In a nanosecond, she called up tens of thousands of videos, instructional text, photos, social posts on how soldiers with his model of exoskeleton had been trained. She easily sidestepped his shots and jumped, unsheathing her talons. She dug her fingers into his throat, taking out the jugular as quickly as possible. His screams of rage gargled to silence. She made a note to delete the look of horror in his eyes, and worse, the emptiness that followed, from her memory, the next cycle. Another mercy killing. Hopefully the eggs would be the last. Even though nothing was wrong with her fuel cell, a weariness seemed to settle into her mechanical limbs. She longed to curl up next to the soldier's fallen body and sleep for good. She peeked into his makeshift stone home in case there were any other survivors. Only a cold stillness greeted her. A singular beep called out, unknown origin. The eggs had started their SOS again, from right below her. Sin Scout sniffed the air and started digging until she hit a door. Steel. Melted. She spent the better part of an hour unearthing rubble until she got to the freezer, 10 feet below. She wrenched off a thinner sheet of steel and dragged out an insulated bag, tearing it open with the metal fangs embedded in her jaw. There you are. Sin Scout spoke the sentence aloud, in case they could hear her. This is the end. It's time to go. Your death will be quick. There were so many more metallic eggs than she would have guessed. Nearly 3 dozen. Their soft silver puckered like lemons. Sin Scout pushed her muzzle closer, taking in as much sensor detail as possible. Human-like, somehow, but different. She licked one, microscopic pincers on her tongue drilling into the egg, gathering a sample. A mix of human and synthetic stem cells ready for programming. A quick analysis of a strand of genetic code made her nearly stagger at the information overload. The code had, well, everything. A gene for an arachnid exoskeleton. Gills for breathing water. Photosynthesis for converting energy. Hollowed out bones for winged flight. The eggs held all the genetic information humanity had cataloged before its demise. Everything a body might need to adapt, survive. And within each egg, a new creature able to execute and manifest traits as needed. But they were waiting, half alive, half frozen in their perpetual tombs. The fuel cell in Sin Scout's chest glowed as she circled the eggs, contemplating the lives biding their time inside. Post-human, post-machine. Something more than both. Beings that might see vitality in the new world rather than a ravaged one. Creatures that could find it hospitable. Creatures that could thrive. For the first time since she had been Sin Scout, something flooded her, and she didn't turn it off. It was a feeling that made her skull and tongue prickle, her ears tingle, her stomach drop. Love, Sin Scout recognized aloud. The emotion activated a chain of sensory memories. Their hand paw playfully swatting Cynthia's giggling nephew, the sun on their skin, fur, and the recliner in the backyard. Cynthia's hand petting Scout's ear, dozing together. Sin Scout stood over the eggs, her body warming them. The other afters pinged her relentlessly, instructing her to carry out the mission. They were coming. They would hunt her if she wouldn't, they warned. You were malfunctioning, mistaken, misled, the afters said. Sin Scout hesitated. She was loyal to them, to their mission. It was a core tenet of Scout and Cynthia threaded together. But there was something bigger now demanding her loyalty. The other afters couldn't see it yet, even though she could. In Earth's ending, she had found a new beginning. And if they wouldn't see it, well, she would do what she could for as long as she could. She switched off comms and funneled her energy to environmental monitoring while she settled carefully onto the eggs, readying to usher them into this new world when they were ready. Her mission had changed. The Almost Activation of Ruby Valentine's Catastrophe Machine by Jenna Hanchi, with music by Fall Precautions, read by the author.
Ruby Valentine was sick of her brothers receiving all the attention. The fifth child of the third son of the seventh generation of inventors Valentine. Yet she was continually passed over. she could have stomached the insulting erasure if the men in her family held even a sliver of her potential. But they most certainly did not. Shameful to see their work representing the Valentine name. Yet when an invitation arrived for the King's Invention Showcase, who was on it? Peter Valentine, Gregory Valentine, Stephen Valentine, Daniel Valentine, and guests. Ruby was so livid that she mentally sketched schematics that might allow one to breathe fire as she stood in the hallway shaking. The invitation crumpled in her fist. Even with the triumph of her clean drinking machine, which drew sanitized water from humid air, the king recognized only the work of her fool brothers. Peter, inventor of the automatic dueling machine, commissioned by the regiments for use in the colonies. Gregory, with his labor extraction machine, drawing from bodily energy to produce multiple craft items at once. Stephen and the perfunctory Punisher, meeting the needs of the modern husband, as the disturbing adverts read. And the blowhard, Daniel, yet to complete a single project, who still boasted of his forthcoming, never-ending beer machine. Utterly mortifying. Regaining her composure, she was a Valentine after all. She replaced the invitation on the servant's tray, spun about, and marched down into her laboratory. So they did not like her machines? Fine. She would give them one not to like. On the way to the showcase, she sat smugly betwixt her brothers, allowing them to brag of their idiotic gadgets trailing on carts behind the carriage. Tonight, they would finally see the error of their ways. She had to argue to add her name to the presentation list, but no matter. To her delight, the belated request meant that she was simply tacked on to the end, and thus placed at the evening's climax. As the bell tolled midnight, Ruby took the stage. Voice dripping with sarcasm, she exclaimed, "Tired of your underlings behaving improperly? Looking for a solution that will be both useful and entertaining? Look no further. I present to you Ruby Valentine's Catastrophe Machine." She yanked a blood-red cloth off to reveal a bulging apparatus, a cacophonous collection of dials and levers, steam valves and tubes. The audience sounded a collective ooh. Ruby squinted at them. Perhaps she needed to be somewhat more clear. Instead of sowing destruction one bullet at a time, or drawing energy from mere bodies, I present to you a machine that so destabilizes the target population that it sends them into complete mental, physical, and societal disarray, allowing you to benefit from their unfortunate collapse. She had thought, surely, this would betray her game. Instead, she stood there flabbergasted as the assembled lords cheered. "Brilliant," one voice called from above the raucous crowd. "Complete and utter genius." Ruby sighed. At least someone understood her mockery. "It is everything we could ever have dreamt of." Oh dear, perhaps not. The king rose in his balcony, and the room immediately quieted. "Ruby Valentine, we did not expect such wonderful work from you. Your previous machines have been disappointing, shall we say. But this is an amazement. We are quite interested to see it at work. We shall call in some servants for a test." The king snapped his fingers, sending a messenger scurrying. Ruby froze, horrified as the other guests tripped over one another to back away from her catastrophe machine. As the stage began to fill with petrified servants, Ruby frowned. She always had a backup plan, but she had not anticipated needing to use it. "Your Majesty, would not a public display be more effective?" "What?" The king narrowed his eyes, but Ruby continued confidently. "I mean only to help ensure Your Majesty's maximum benefit. Tonight's audience of nobles and inventors would do little to strengthen your already illustrious reputation. But were the demonstration held in front of a gathering of Your Majesty's more unwieldy subjects, it may serve you twofold, as a test of the machine and display of your power." Bowing low, she awaited his response with bated breath. The king did not like being questioned, but he perceived the value of this strange woman's proposition. In addition, he was already quite drunk and eyeing a flirtatious lady in the corner of the room. Perhaps there were more appealing entertainments for this evening. "Yes, yes, good," he waved. "We have decided that there will be a demonstration of our newest acquisition, the Catastrophe Machine, tomorrow at noon in the East End. Servants, you may return to your duties, but leave our amazing contraption on full display, for tonight we celebrate." Cheers again rang out. As the servants scattered in relief, Ruby grabbed one for a private word. The noises of the king's festivities faded in the distance as Ruby walked briskly through the dark city streets, leaving her brothers to reap what they'd sown in earning the king's favor with their horrid machines. Who needed his recognition anyway? A corner of her mouth lifted as she realized that no one would after tonight. She tilted her head and breathed deeply, allowing the refreshing chill of the night air to help cleanse her of the unfortunate affair. Well, that and... She paused under a street lamp to check her pocket watch. Right on time. 3, 2, 1, boom. The timer activating the catastrophe machine's secondary functionality had been a last resort, but she was ever a meticulous planner. It had taken quite some time to get everything exactly right, but never let it be said that Ruby Valentine was one to back down from a challenge. The limited range memory wipe was the simplest part, elementary even. Trickier was tuning the self-destruct mechanism with such delicate precision that it should raise the machine without affecting so much as a fly that deigned to land upon its surface. In a moment of levity, Ruby splashed her foot in a puddle, watching the water rise up before falling into new patterns on the sidewalk. Rebuilding a government would require such marvelous machines. Envisioning an endless array of possibilities, the short-legged woman lengthened her strides, impatient to examine the tinkering she had, shall we say, inherited from her mystified elder siblings. Tomorrow, she thought, as she practically ran, skirts lifted high and heels clipping down the cobblestones. All will finally know the worth of Ruby Valentine and her unparalleled machines.
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Sin Scout by K.C. Griffont, with music by Fog Machine, and The Almost Activation of Ruby Valentine's Catastrophe Machine by Jenna Hanchi, with music by Fall Precautions. Theme music by Dane Lescombe. Come visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree, or online at spacecowboybooks.com. Don't forget to subscribe, and visit us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.